Welcome to the second episode of the second season of the Mobile Storytelling Podcast with me, Wietse Vellinga in Friesland.
And me, Björn Staschen in Hamburg. This podcast is still about how to tell a story with your smartphone.
And today we have our first Spanish guest, Leonor Suarez.
Leonor comes from Asturias, working for the regional broadcaster RTPA, and she has been working with a phone for a long time. Leonor, how did you get into mobile journalism?
Well, it was in 2014. I took a workshop on mobile journalism, which in fact I have to confess that back then I didn't know what it was about. I didn't know anything about mobile journalism. Discovered that, I realized that that was really amazing and that there would be a before and after that workshop, because that meant freedom for a journalist, for me as a storyteller, as a TV storyteller. Because you know, there's a lot of logistic and technical requirements involved in producing a TV story. You need more people to work in teams, which is good, but sometimes you don't have a team and you have a story, you want to tell it, but you don't have a team or you don't have that gear. So I think there were lots of limitations producing a story for television. So when I discovered that with the phone I had in my pocket, I could do all the work, wherever. So that changed completely my approach to my work.
There are many people who take a course or a training, and I say 80 or 90% of them don't use it often afterwards. So they have the training, but they don't use it. Was it only this moment where you noticed it gives you freedom and you started using it right away? Or was there also not enough resources at your company? Were there other reasons where you said, well, this made me going? Or was it just a decision, you liked it and you went off?
I broadcast my first story in the television, which was like a 13 or 14 minutes, because it's what I do long form. So that's what I needed to do. And after that, I have never stopped. And now we do it more and more. And I have my colleagues, my small team at the program. We are all of them now working with the phones, along with the other cameras, not just the phones. But it's been, for me, I know that what you say, because two other colleagues on my station had took the same course, the same workshop, and they didn't do a lot of thing with that. So you need to have the decision to go ahead, because Wietse can say also that it's a hard way ahead. It's not just when you come back from the workshop, you know the senses, you have the illusion, the idea, but then you have to learn everything. And everything is a lot of things, a lot of technical things, a lot of narrative things, and it's a really hard a long
and
way.
And what was the biggest challenge you had to overcome to actually make it work?
It's still, because I still have to learn every day, because things change very fast, and I think technological aspect, because up until then I was like a traditional journalist. Yes, I work in television, but I have that background of the newspaper, and so I didn't know anything about technological techniques of television, nothing at all. So I had to learn everything, and to face, you know, the situation when you go on the ground, you have a person you need to interview in front of you, and you have mm-hmm. many wires, and you don't know how to do with them, and things doesn't work, and you are like, why? There are always a problem, and it takes a long time to be able to solve, to gather the knowledge to be able to solve all those problems. So technical, I think the technical aspect were for me the most difficult thing, and then to keep me updated, because things changed a lot when I started, when I took that workshop. We didn't use gimbals, we didn't even move the phone. They used to say you just put the phone on the tripod and don't move it because it will shake and
steady shots,
and that changed completely. We didn't use NDs, we didn't use anything. We just used, I think, the phone and the microphone, and things have changed a lot. So you need to keep yourself updated, and it takes also a lot of time.
Leno, when you say you had mostly technical issues to overcome, you also talked about your boss who said you're crazy, you want to go to that workshop. So what about colleagues and company? Was it any difficulty to make them show stuff that was filmed on a phone? Didn't they say, this crazy woman will never bring anything that we can broadcast?
Okay, not that way, because as I said, 10 days after, I broadcasted a story that many people didn't know it was filmed on a phone. At the end of the, back in 2014, that was like real modern. At the end of the story, I was in camera and say, "Oh, this story has been filmed completely on a phone," because in that moment it was cool to say that. But most people didn't know while they were watching the story that had been filmed with a phone. I think the problems came from the other side. They thought journalists were starting to enter a field that was not for us. That was a problem, because the camera operators started thinking that the journalists were good grab their jobs, or that there will be an effect on their jobs. So they were not really happy with the journalists filming. They used to say that we could not learn, or we didn't have the skills. But I think most of the time it was a problem that they thought their jobs would be affected and they will be fired. And after so many years, nobody was fired, and they now it's a more natural approach. And moreover, after the pandemic, who has changed everything, because now it's very normal to watch on TV stories filmed with the phone, because during the lockdown that was the only tool. Most of the time we have to film. So I think it was not easy, and it had been not easy for a long time, up until 1 or 2 years before.
But you did something very special rather quickly. You made a documentary on the Civil War in Spain, and you used a reenactment. So you were not just a journalist, you were a director, you were a more than a one-man band, as a journalist usually is now. But you were more than that. You were a one-man band shooting an actual film. How was that?
Okay. I have to say that for me that's kind of natural, because as I work the long format, in the long format we use many resources, narrative or storytelling resources, to produce our story. So for me, kind of involving lots of people, asking them to behave this way or doing this or that, is kind of normal, because you need that to do a long form or a documentary. But in that time, I had that story on my head, that I had been researching. And when I discovered that the phone could help me and I could do that with the phone, I just started. I didn't think it twice. I just asked with the reanimators, and I was frankly with them. I told them, I have this idea, I have this research, and I have the idea of film everything with a phone. It's like a kind of experiment. I don't know what will be the outcome of this, but we can try. And they were happy because they thought that was a good idea to experiment, to explore new ways, and they got involved. That was a hard work, not just the filming. I think filming was not that difficult, even though there were a lot of people and they reenacted with guns.
I remember seeing a behind the scenes video with literally 10s, 20, 30 people running around dressed as warriors, soldiers, and you in the middle with your phone. How did you do that? Yeah. I mean, wasn't it chaotic? Wasn't it you and your phone getting lost between all those people?
That was an adventure, but I have to say that I love adventures. So for me, it was like I had a really nice time. I enjoy a lot. I nearly go mad that day.
Venga, moveros.
This is a true story.
Moveros. Deprisa, no os detengáis.
It happened in 1937 at the end of the Civil War in Spain.
Venga, mirad de frente.
Mirad pa'lante.
Mirad pa'lante.
Mirad pa'lante.
Dispare.
The ones with the guns are the war winners.
Did you sometimes in that situation think, my word, this doesn't work with a phone? Or did you actually find moments where the phone still had advantages?
Okay, in that moment, I couldn't think that because I didn't have other alternative, other choice for me. Because first, I didn't know how to operate a traditional camera. I didn't know the technical knowledge you need to operate a traditional camera. And I didn't have the traditional camera. So in that moment, there was no choice for me to think that. Now, before starting the project I am doing now, I thought it twice to do it with a DSLR. But the problem is that now I'm happy with the outcome of what I'm doing with the phone. And also, I have all the gear for the phone, but I don't have the gear for a DSLR. So I would need to change all my gear to change for a DSLR. And I'm not sure that the outcome could be, maybe it could be some better, but not would be very much better, because I think most of the, for me, the key point is the storytelling more than the exactly, of course, I take care of the quality of the image, of the framing and the light and everything. But for me, the key point is the storytelling. And with the phone, I can be more flexible for the storytelling, for filming, for being able to catch that moment, that look, that person who is thinking and speaks in a loud voice, or you know, this. I'm more flexible to catch, to react to what's happening, and I'm not sure I could be able to do so with a DSLR. And also, I would need to start from the beginning because I don't know how to do it with that, to change all my gear. So yes, I have thought it before starting this project, but at the end, I have thought that it was not useless. It was not worth doing that. So I stick to the phone, which I'm happy with the outcome of what I get with the phone.
But of course, we're in the middle of a pandemic still. Has your regular work changed a lot because of the pandemic?
Completely, completely. Yes. Now it's in next week. It will be the first anniversary of the lockdown in Spain, and from that day on, that very same day on, 1 year ago, we changed. We rescheduled. We stopped what we were doing so far, and we started focusing on coronavirus and telling stories of coronavirus. And in that case, I think that was the best moment for Mojo in the newsroom, because up until then, that was me and one colleague, the only one that were using Mojo. And when lockdown started, lots of journalists started working from home. Lots of people we wanted to interview were locked in home. So the phones were the only tools we all had, and we started to use that phone to produce the stories for the newscast, and in my case for the weekly program. So it changed in two ways. First, it changed the stories. All the stories were focused from then on coronavirus, and second, Mojo had started to have a key role in the way we produce stories, because we ask people to film themselves, we coach them and teach them to be able to film themselves with quality. We also started using the phones to film in my case, I've been using it a lot to film in hospitals, nursing homes, all this, the health centers, because it's really useful to film with a phone in such a place, because for one reason the team is reduced to one, so the risk are low, and it's more flexible. It's a small gear. You can film when you have to disinfect. It's easier. People, you are filming people who are really sick in hospitals, ambulances, or so. And when you are you alone with the phone, it's better. You don't intimidate them. And I think, for instance, one of my last stories is on board an COVID ambulance. They told me if I wanted to go on board the ambulance, there was room just for one person, because of course there are two technicians, the person, and so if we were two, we had to go in another car and to follow them in another car. So the story is not the same, of course. If you can go on board the ambulance, you can talk to the people, to the patient, and everything. So there are lots of situations during the pandemic where filming with a phone is easier, flexible, or is more suitable. So now we are using very often, and yeah.
One thing that I hear from colleagues is what you say on the one hand, but on the other hand, the difficulty of the phone not being able to zoom in a lot, but you would need to walk close in, but then there's a pandemic and you're asked to keep a distance. Is that a problem in your work? Did that make it difficult? Are most of your shots kind of American shots, wide-angled? Or how do you overcome that problem?
No, take into account that whenever you enter a hospital or an ICU or an ambulance, you will be protected with I don't know the name, PPE or something, this kind of, you know, the protection.
Yeah, the complete
infection
protection.
I've always in the situations where you need to wear that in hospitals, you protect yourself and you can approach. So in that situation, you usually don't have any, you don't have problems. The problem is when you are maybe filming in a home and you need to keep the distance. But in those cases, there are always some, there's always a solution. You can use your Zoom, maybe. You don't. You can use a microphone poll. I think there are solutions. For instance, you can ask the person to film themselves. I use that a lot. Even people that were in the hospital, that were at hospital, if they were good enough to talk to you, I asked them to film themselves. So there are always solutions. I'm not saying that the phone is always the best solution, not always, but in some situations it can be. I have to say that when I was alone into the hospitals, if it was possible, I always ask to go with a colleague with a traditional camera so we could work. That person with the big camera that focus on the things that big camera do well, and me with the, I used to take a phone with on a gimbal and a GoPro in a small a pocket tripod, so I could film while walking. That sometimes it's easier for a when you film with a gimbal than doing that with a big camera, for instance. So in the cases that there was the option of two people inside the hospital or the nursing home, I went with a colleague with a traditional camera. When there was not that option or the phone was better, I went myself with the phone.
You know, we're nearly at the end of our podcast, and kind of to wrap it up, you described that you started off as a pioneer, more or less a single person in a company that didn't really embrace mobile journalism. Would you say that after the pandemic and with the help of the pandemic, you're not the pioneer anymore, and there'll be more people who'll keep mobile journalism as an everyday tool?
In my company, you mean? In my company,
yes.
Or in general?
In your company, in your world.
Okay, in my company, maybe the three of us in our team are the ones that I use on a regular basis, Mojo. But I think the most important thing is that even though the big part of my colleagues don't use it on a regular basis, they have lost the fear. They have lost the prejudices and to use the phone. And for them now is another choice, another tool that can be used whenever it's a good option. So I think the good thing is that we have lost the prejudice, and that's an enormous step ahead.
Absolutely. And I think that's a nice point to wrap it up. Thank you for participating in this podcast in the second episode of the second season.
Thank you for having me.
I love it how you say that, Vita.
I know.
Second episode of the second season.
Yes, I'm looking forward to the third episode of the third season.
If you like what you hear, please share our podcast. You can find us on all major platforms, on Anchor, on Spotify, on iTunes, wherever you like. And we are happy if you help us to reach more people with the idea of mobile journalism. So this is it for today. Bye-bye from Hamburg.
Bye-bye.